Our third case this morning is number 22-1201, Stimson Lumber Company v. United States. Okay, Mr. Stewart.
May it please the Court, Your Honor. Although this case only involves one plaintiff and there's only one deed to interpret, it does involve several very significant legal errors. The easement deed to the railroad in this case, and it's critical to keep in mind throughout that it's undisputed that it conveyed an easement to the railroad, was granted to the railroad for the construction of the railroad and the operation of the railroad. That is an obvious fact.
The deed doesn't say that.
Doesn't say that, Your Honor, and that is exactly why I think we're here. The history of the context and circumstance, surrounding circumstances of this deed should have led to a conclusion that it was limited to railroad purposes as a matter of law.
Okay, well, there's your problem, because the Oregon Court of Appeals decision in Criterion seems to come out the other way on that exact point, where the purpose of the easement was for agricultural purposes, but the deed didn't say so, and the court said it had to be construed broadly to include recreational purposes.
I think here, Your Honor, this case follows almost precisely the analysis and the ruling of Preso II. Preso II...
You want to talk about Preso II. For the moment, I want to talk about Criterion. How do you distinguish Criterion? It's a problem for you.
I think the Criterion is set forth in the Tressel opinion, which specifically says that the court is supposed to look at the context of the deed and the surrounding circumstances. Here, the context was the railroad's charter that was adopted in 1905.
Can you point to any language in the deed itself that incorporates the railroad's charter?
No, I can't, Your Honor. It doesn't specifically say that.
That's but if you look, as well.
If you look at the timing of it in 1905 and the fact that the deed was then granted in 1907, very shortly thereafter, I think it's fairly obvious, actually, that it was done in furtherance of the railroad's charter. The charter itself says that the railroad only has the right to construct and operate their railroad. The legislature, the Oregon legislature, could have very easily said, we also grant them the right to build a hiking and biking trail, but they did not. They specifically limited it to the operation of the railroad.
Now, and there are other deeds, right, that actually expressly contain language limiting the easements for rail use. Do you agree that in the broader case, there were other deeds that had that limiting language?
There were several deeds, Your Honor. There were, in this particular landowner owned 17 parcels at the outset. One turned out not to be adjacent. Five of them were ruled to have conveyed an easement limited to railroad purposes. And the eight, where they were ruled not to be even granted an easement. And so we're down to these three parcels where the court concluded that it was an easement, but in essence ruled that the easement was broad enough to allow a hiking and biking trail. And we believe that's error under clear Oregon law for 140 years. If you go,
How do you distinguish though, and I apologize because I took you away from Judge Dyke's question, how do you distinguish Criterion?
I think the Criterion, when you specifically say it's for an agricultural purpose, or you specifically say that it's for a recreational purpose, that allows you to expand the uses within that purpose. Here,
there was no statement like that in the Criterion deed.
No, I think that's exactly right, Your Honor. They allowed it to be used. The Criterion deed was for ingress and egress. It didn't really have anything to do with the use of the adjacent parcel next to it. They had the deed, the Criterion deed was for ingress and egress to that larger parcel. Had this been an ingress and egress deed, that they could have used it to access that parcel no matter what the use of the larger parcel was used for. I think the Criterion deed is completely separate from these facts, where we're not looking at an ingress and egress deed, which can be expanded within the reasonable uses of that deed. That's basically Oregon law. That's the law everywhere. Here, you have an easement that's granted to the railroad for their railroad purposes. And the court basically found that instead of limiting this deed to real...
But your problem is it doesn't say that.
It doesn't say that, but all these other cases in Oregon from, frankly, the Preso 2, which you don't want me to talk about Preso 2, but Preso 2 cited Bernard's.
Preso 2 is not an Oregon case.
It cited Bernard's, which is an Oregon case, with approval and actually quoted it to say that when the deed is to a railroad for the construction and operation of the railroad, it's limited to railroad purposes as a matter of law. Bernard's was 1952, Oregon Supreme Court. It, in turn, relied on an 1897 opinion called Wason v. Pills, which said the same thing, which said that, and it didn't say it was limited to railroad purposes either. That deed said that if it is, or it was just granted for the purposes of a road, and they said that distinguished any case like Criterion, and specifically said that the scope of that easement was limited to the purpose of the charter, which is what Bernard's followed. And it goes all the way back to 1882 in the Oregon Supreme Court of Oregon Railway, when the Supreme Court of Oregon basically said it had no purpose listed in it whatsoever, but said that you have to follow the charter that established the railroad in the first place, and that it was limited to railroad purposes as a matter of law. The I only want to cite Preso 2 because it cites the Oregon case that is the foundation which limits the scope of the easement to railroad purposes as a matter of law. It cites and approves the Bernard's case from 1952.
Now, this case, though, applies Vermont law, right?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
Doesn't this case that you want to talk about apply Vermont law?
No, the Bernard's case cited in Preso 2 is an Oregon Supreme Court case.
I'm talking about Preso 2. I hope I'm saying that right.
Yes.
Am I incorrect in my memory that it applied Vermont law?
It did apply Vermont
okay.
law.
Okay.
And it applied Vermont law because the railroad was staked out and laid out, and they took possession of it even before the deed was granted, which is exactly what this Western Timber deed says. And so that's why I was trying to make the analogy.
How does the Bernard's case help you?
The Bernard's case says specifically that you have to look at the charter of the railroad to determine the purpose for which the grant was.
Where does it say that?
I'll have to pull that out, Your Honor. I've got it in my notes here somewhere. Well, I've got it two different places. I've got it cited in Loveridge 3, which is the court CFC case at 148 Fed
no,
Claim.
I'm looking at the Bernard case.
Yeah,
say that. Well, if you can't find it, you can give it to me.
I think it's, I'll have to read it and do it in my rebuttal, but I think it's at page 585 in the opinion.
There's no 585.
That's the state court case, so I've got it at 248 Pacific 2nd at 343 and 344. But I'll look at that and look at it a little more carefully during my time for rebuttal. The second point I want to make is that ultimately, besides not finding that the deed was limited to railroad purposes, the CFC found that it was an open-ended, unrestricted, general right-of-way easement, which is a judicial unicorn. An easement, by definition, has to be for a particular purpose.
Apparently not under Oregon law.
I don't agree with that at all, Your Honor. I believe any easement has to be for a particular purpose. And I believe that's true under Oregon law as well. And even in the Criterion opinion, the deed was for a particular purpose. It was for ingress and egress to a larger parcel that allowed it to be used for, the larger parcel was used for agricultural purposes and they changed it to recreational purposes. I do not believe they changed the underlying deed for ingress and egress to recreational purposes in Criterion. And so the reason that an easement deed to a railroad cannot be a general unlimited easement is because it has to be a foreseeable use, and you can't change the use. That's been the law that this court has enunciated over and over again. When in Preso 2, they said it's beyond imagination that they intended to grant a railroad, grant a hiking and biking trail easement. And then later in Toews, when this court said it's beyond cavil that they intended to grant such an easement.
Well, counsel, the Court of Federal Claims determined that the deed broadly conveyed a right-of-way. Broadly conveyed a right-of-way.
That's right, Your Honor.
So what's wrong with that?
I think that is a judicial unicorn. It has to be for a particular purpose.
What do you mean judicial unicorn?
It doesn't exist. A broad, open-ended, unrestricted grant is the opposite of what an easement actually is. An easement is the right to use it for a particular solitary purpose, to use it for that purpose without ownership. And if you give a broad, unrestricted, open right-of-way easement, that's contrary to basic property law. The third point I want to make, and I hope we don't even have to get to this issue, but that's the issue of state law abandonment. Here, under these facts, the CFC also ruled that this easement was not abandoned prior to...
Did you conclude that the easement was broad enough to cover rail use and trail use? Do you agree there's no evidence of the railroad's intent to abandon the easement for trail use? Do you agree with that?
I do agree that there is no direct evidence that they intended to abandon it for trail use, other than the fact that they never used it for any purpose other than railroad purposes for over 100 years. And if they had...
Non-use is not abandonment, right?
A non-use alone is not abandonment. Here they had non-use starting in 2007 when the catastrophic storms wiped it out. The Oregon legislature and the governmental agencies in Oregon then started on a campaign to use other governmental agencies to convert it from a railroad easement to a hiking and biking trail easement. If it had been broad enough to encompass all uses, including hiking and biking trail easement, they would not have needed to do that. They could have just done it on their own without using the Trails Act. The Trails Act allowed them the vehicle by which they could convert that easement from a hiking and biking, or from a railroad purposes easement to a hiking and biking trail easement. And the government's trying to read prong three of Preso 2 completely out of the law. They basically say it's not applicable because it's irrelevant, because it's not abandoned under federal law. That is completely incorrect. I'm well into my rebuttal time, and I'll reserve a couple minutes if I can. Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll give you 2 minutes. Ms. Shugart-Schmidt.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Caitlin Shugart-Schmidt here on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, I think you are absolutely correct about where the analysis for this case has to start, and that is with Oregon law. And what Oregon case law tells us is that there is a very specific set of steps we go through when we are looking at and interpreting deeds. In this case, the first thing that we look to are the words of the deed. And as the CFC found through this long chain of cases, there are a variety of deeds that had been at issue along this rail corridor. Some of those words meant that the deed conveyed fee simple. Some of those words meant that the deed conveyed an easement that was restricted explicitly to railroad or transportation purposes. And some deeds, like this one here, were very broad and open-ended and contained essentially no restrictions on use of a right-of-way passing across this land. And I think that that's really important context to start with, right? And I think we get that from the Criterion Interest case or from the Verzanio case, where it lays out that framework. And then it follows that by saying, if the words are clear, and here I think those words are clear, right? There's no restriction other than this ability of Western Timber to pass through. What that results in is an easement that's granted for unrestricted reasonable use. And I think that's just very clear from the case law. And I think in terms of this question about, you know, does it have to be for a purpose? Well, I think this easement was a right-of-way. And both, you know, Oregon state law in their cases and Black's Law Dictionary tell us that a right-of-way is the right to pass through property used by another. And that's what this easement was for. It was for the railroad to be able to pass through this land. It was a broad and unrestricted grant. And as such, Oregon tells us that you can use an unrestricted easement like that for almost anything as long as it's within the scope of this right-of-way. And I think criterion interest also informs us that you can have these sort of broader changes in use, say from agricultural uses, moving cattle, all the way to recreational use, and that can be encompassed within the scope of this broad deed. The other point I'd like to make on this is that I think it's important to keep in mind that the test that's laid out here says the first question is, you know, do we have a deed that conveys fee simple, or does it convey an easement? And then our second question is this easement broad enough to encompass the type of trail use we're talking about? And under plaintiff's reading of the law or interpretation of the law, we would never answer that second question because it would just be a flat rule that any time a railroad acquired property, it had to be for railroad purposes, and it would never be able to be broader than that. And I think that's just a little illogical and isn't consistent with the case law, which says, you know, you can have broader easements, railroads can bargain for them just like any other party, and once you've acquired that broader easement, you're entitled to use it as long as it's reasonable and not an undue burden, which plaintiffs haven't put forth any evidence in the CFC, and so they've waived that here. You know, the idea that there'd be any higher burden is consistent with that use. They're allowed to move forward with it.
You know, I'm not usually a fan of a hypothetical, but let me go there this time with you, okay? If the railroad charter were actually incorporated in the deed, would your position be different?
I think that's a tougher question. I think under Oregon law, it says look to the text, and if the text explicitly said we have a purpose that's incorporated, and this is, you know, that would be a closer question or a tougher question. But I also don't think that that's the question here, because I think it's clear that that's not the case, and there's no point where plaintiff has pointed to text in the deed to say it is explicitly incorporated or otherwise included in the text of the deed. And I think I'm not as familiar with that with regard to all of the other deeds along this line, but I don't think that there was any sort of standard practice with regard to that, right? The deeds were individually bargained for. They got different bundles, and in this case, it was a very broad easement that was bargained for. Another point sort of on this broader issue is plaintiff spends a lot of time talking about other cases that hold different things, but I'd say, you know, there's a bucket of cases that say this is the difference between a fee simple and an easement. There are cases that say this is what happens when you have a broad easement, like criterion interests. And the third bucket might be here are cases where there's a broad easement and we've limited it, and plaintiff hasn't pointed to any cases in that bucket because there don't really appear to be any. They point to cases talking about the difference between a fee simple and an easement and claim that they are informative on the other issue, but they just don't speak to that at all. So the cases that we do have to guide us, like criterion, are very clear that when you have an open deed, it can be used for any reasonable use, like this one is.
I'm going to ask you to distinguish, even though I recognize it's applying Vermont law, right? But can you go ahead and distinguish Precial, because your opposing counsel likes to talk about that case a lot, Precial 2.
Well, I think you hit on the clear distinction, which is that is a case that's applying Oregon law, and so it's just different. Vermont law. I apologize, Your Honor. That is a case that applies Vermont law, and that's the question here, right? What does state property law tells us about what an easement is, or if this is a fee simple property interest, or whatever else? And that is a distinction that's material, right? That case applies Oregon law. Vermont law. This case only deals with Oregon law, and those are the cases that we should be looking to guide our interpretation of the easement. That case did talk about the Bernards case some. I think the Bernards case is actually sort of useful generally. I think it talks about the difference of moving between a railroad line to a railroad road, and actually says, you know, you can make those kinds of logging railroad to a logging road, and says you can make those types of changes, and actually the type of transit over it isn't that essential because you can have a horseback or a wagon and carriage and a car, and those are all means of transport over a road. So I think Bernard's is a useful case in terms of it being Oregon law, but the fact that it was cited to in the other case is just not relevant because that was dealing with Vermont law. If there are no other questions about the scope of the easement or the use of it, I would just turn briefly to abandonment and say, you know, I want to highlight here that the abandonment of a property interest in Oregon is a very high standard and requires specific, either explicit conduct or implicit conduct, words that are very clear combined with actions. You know, there's a test for it. And that test has not been met here. The fact that the railroad was, or the POTB was actively involved in conversations with different groups, I think over the years makes clear it was interested in using its property interest. You know, it first acquired this in order to try and restore service on the rail. You know, that was obviously disrupted by severe weather. It didn't have the financial capacity to restore service. It looked for other options to continue. It's, you know, intended to continue that use. And in this case, the fact that it entered into the STIA prior to sending, which was the interagency trail agreement, prior to submitting any notice to the STB about abandoning rail service, I think is very informative because it shows it was intending to use and to continue to use its easement in some manner, and thus didn't abandon it under Oregon property law. And with that, unless your honors have further questions, I would thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Stewart, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Just a couple of quick...
I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
I think the whole premise of the government's argument about the scope is that it just doesn't say for railroad purposes only. But if you look at Oregon law under Trestle, you have to look at the context of the deed, which is the charter, and the surrounding circumstances, which was that it was already staked out, laid out, and ready for use pursuant to that charter. That's the context of that deed, which you have to look at under Oregon law. Number two, the government referred to the discussion of the Bernard's opinion in Preso 2, but the discussion of the Bernard's opinion in Preso 2 is directly related to the scope of the easement, not to whether it conveyed a fee.
But where does the Bernard case help you? I've read the case. I've looked at those pages that you cited a moment ago. I don't see that they say anything helpful to you.
I think Bernard's, you have to go, Bernard's cites the Wason v. Pills case from 1897 on the purpose of scope, which in turn cites the Oregon Railway case from 1872. Both of those had no restrictions in the deeds whatsoever for railroad purposes, and the court, the Oregon Supreme Court, had no hesitancy whatsoever in ruling that the scope of those deeds were limited to railroad purposes only. And so I think if you look at the totality of Oregon law from 1872 to 1892 to 1952, and then ultimately the inclusion of Preso 2, I think it is clear that Oregon law recognizes that a deed to a railroad for the construction and operation of the railroad is limited to railroad purposes only as a matter of law. With respect to the scope of the easement, I just think it's implausible that any grantor in 1907 intended to grant a broad, open-ended, unrestricted easement to the railroad that could later be converted to a hiking and biking trail by the Federal Trails Act.
Okay, I think we're out of time. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank both counsel. The case is submitted.